Jordan, do you want to be on our mini podcast?
Sure.
We'll just put it right here.
Hey.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, Jordan. Oh, I just started recording when I called you.
This is the podcast?
I don't know what the podcast is. The podcast is an MP3 I upload patches.
I see.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good, then. Well, then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine.
It's a podcast.
All right, we are here with Matt Patches, one of the hosts of Fighting in the War Room, and returning oft-requested guest, either requested have him on again or requested never have him on again. We're gonna make half of you really happy and half of you really mad. It's Jordan Hoffman.
Hey, how's everybody doing out there?
I'm sure they're doing well. Here in Colorado, we're a little cold. We got some snow. I imagine you guys are cold down there in Park City.
It's been, I mean, when we landed, I think it was like 9 degrees, and then it kind of inched up to the 40s, and now we're going back. We're dropping.
Oh. There was only one night where I was like, this place is crazy, but so far, so good.
No snow, sadly. I love the snow. This is where I come. I come to Utah to breathe cool, crisp, clean air. Do you have that in Colorado, Dave?
Yeah, we have a lot of clean air. It's thin, but that just means you know, get drunk better.
Yeah,
it's a quality drunk. So you guys are, you know, have processed the first weekend of Sundance. Has there been any standout films for you, Jordan, that you've seen so far?
I like the documentary Apollo 11 that's going to be coming out in theaters soon. It's a very, you know, kind of what you see is what you get. It's a documentary that's all old footage, some of which has never been seen before. Some of it is large format, 70 millimeter, and it's just about the Apollo 11 mission, and it's time for the 50th anniversary
release.
We've
never seen that on screen before. Nothing recent has ever depicted the moon landing.
Yeah. No, it's yeah, I mean, sure. Most people who have an interest in this know it backwards and forwards by now, but it's just a beautiful collection of images. No talking head interviews, you know, nothing. It's just a straight dope.
Right. That's my big question, because one thing I liked about First Man was the score that kind of like propelled us forward, especially the cue that, like the landing cue.
Yeah,
but this movie has nothing like that.
No. This movie does have music, and it has electronic Moog synthesizer music, but it's a Moog synthesizer that is 1969 era, so it's appropriate.
Ooh.
And it's just great. I mean, it's one to see in a theater, and if you're a NASA nerd, you're going to dig it.
Who's putting it out? Do you know?
Neon.
Oh, Neon.
Yeah.
Neon is becoming a cool little boutique for not just like genre movies, but documentaries and foreign films.
Yeah, Neon has another movie coming out that was picked up at Sundance that Patches and I both liked, called Monos. And it's set...
yes, please try and describe Monos.
Yeah, it's a hard movie to describe. It's set somewhere in Latin America. It was shot in Colombia, but they don't really say where it is. It's in the hinterlands, up in the mountains, and then down in the jungle. And it's about a group of teens that are working in some kind of military unit, and you don't know what the war is.
But their unit's called the Organization, so it's all very mysterious.
Yeah, they're part of the Organization, and there is a woman who is some sort of scientist, played by...
God, now I'm going to forget. I'm going to look it up. Keep talking.
She's an actress.
She was in... We were just talking about the movie, the Tracy Let's Play August Osage County, that she was in. She was the breakout star. I'm going to remember
whatever her name is. So,
she plays Doctora.
Yeah, she's the doctor, and they've kidnapped her. So the job is just, like, watch after the...
Doctora.
Watch after the doctor and wait further instructions. And then, but they're like teens, you know, and they're partying at the bonfire, and then like the mishap happens, and then they have to move the doctora, and then a battle breaks out. It's really weird. It's shot like it's from outer space. Like, it's a really innovative movie. There have been some that have complained that it's a little too distant. Like, you never quite know what the heck is going on.
It's, like, so beautiful, though.
And some people felt that it was so distant they couldn't really connect to it. And I don't disagree, but I think that's kind of by design. It's such a strange story that I almost feel like if I knew more about the plot, I wouldn't like it as much. There's also some very unexpected comedy in there, too, but it can get very violent.
They ride a cow.
They ride a cow.
Drunk, I think.
Hmm.
So the movie's called Monos, and also the composer is this woman, Mika...
Levy.
Mika Levy, who's a very well-known composer.
Yes, this is another far-out kind of... I wouldn't call it noise. I'd call it, like, sonic warping.
Yeah.
And it really leans into the nature of their place. They live in the mountains where you can see the clouds. It's all green and dark, and they light campfires and they have drunken parties with their AK-40s or their AK-47s or whatever. It's just wild Lord of the Flies-esque behavior.
Then they have to go down to the jungle, and it's like, speaking of flies, that one shot where the flies are all over the woman's face and she's freaking out.
And for people playing at home, that was Juliet Nicholson.
Anyways, that's Monos. That was another big hit for me. And you know, it's always some good Sundance movies. I don't know. Patrick saw a movie called The Souvenir that I missed that's getting a lot of buzz.
We're definitely going to have to wait to talk about that because that's David's favorite movie of the festival.
Ugh.
And he's going to be talking endlessly about it when he gets in this show. So we'll hold there.
All right. And David did not like Velvet Buzzsaw, but I thought it was amusing. And Patrick, he liked it too.
You're getting ahead of that conversation. Yeah, no. It's thin. It's silly. But it's a romp. I mean, and it's bloody. It's crazy.
Yeah, I also saw a documentary about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and it's called Knock Down the House, and it's a standard documentary, but it's going to get a lot of attention because Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is such a vibrant and exuberant individual that, you know, whatever, you know, she blows her nose and she makes front page news. So I think the movie will get a lot of attention when it comes out, wherever it does.
You need to talk about another vibrant, exuberant woman that led a documentary. It seems like one of your favorite movies
that you've actually seen. Yeah.
And I'm guessing we're not going to talk about it on the podcast when David rolls around.
No. There's a movie coming out. It's a Magnolia picked it up and Hulu helped finance it. So it'll be on Hulu eventually. A documentary about Dr. Ruth Westheimer. And some of the younger listeners won't know who she is, and if people listening from outside the U.S. won't know who she is either, because I bumped into a friend of mine from England, he never heard of her, and I bumped into a friend of mine from Australia, and she never heard of her.
And you don't think young people know who Dr. Ruth is?
No. Anyone who's old enough to think that Loveline is what it is does not remember Dr. Ruth. But
how did Dr. Ruth – I mean, I know who Dr. Ruth is, but I'm not exactly sure how Dr. Ruth – blew up. She didn't have a show. Did she have a column?
No, she had a show.
Oh, really?
You need to see the documentary.
I guess I do.
I'll give you the very brief thing about Dr. Ruth. First of all, she's a fascinating woman. You know, her parents were killed in a concentration camp. She would kind of escape to Switzerland, grew up in an orphanage during the war. After that, she went to Israel, and she actually was a sniper in the army during the War of Independence, even though she's only 4'9" or whatever. And then she got married and she wound up in Paris and then she wound up in New York. She had a second husband. She was a single mother.
All along the way, she's stupid.
She's stupid. She was a woman of she enjoyed earthly pleasures. She was a woman of love and lust. And then she started getting involved in like social services. She worked for Planned Parenthood in Harlem and wound up getting a degree, a PhD. In I don't know, have social care, whatever. What's it called? Social work. And also like sex therapy. And she got her PhD at the age of 42 at Columbia University. You know, thick German accent. And she was working for some city organization. And then there was a local radio station that wanted to have somebody come on to do like a freebie. You know how sometimes you get requested to go on a podcast and not get paid.
No, when does that happen?
So somebody called and said, do you have somebody to come on to answer questions about sexual health and sexuality? And nobody wanted to do it because there was no money involved. But Dr. Ruth said, all right, I'm free. I'll go. She went down to the radio station, did a guest shot.
And the radio, it's not like that's their normal topic of
discussion.
No,
it was some kind of news station.
Right.
And she went and the producers were like, holy effing S. This short Jewish German grandmother is hilarious. knows her stuff about sexuality and is very frank and open and will say things like, well, you know, Dr. Ruth, you must insert the penis into the vagina, you know, just lays it all out in such a way. And they're like, we got to give this woman a show. And they hired her, gave her a show, and then she became an international phenomenon.
Well, Jordan, what I'm saying is you're Jewish.
Yes.
You're on a random radio show sort of thing right now. If you just started answering Dave's sex questions.
Dave, do you have any problems satisfying your partner, or is there any questions you have about how to get things going in the bedroom?
I mean, I could give you a real question that I had in my teens, and I will.
Give me the question.
You could get famous.
I'll give you the answer with a German accent.
Okay, excellent. I was having sex with my girlfriend, and it was dark, and there was what I thought was a mild stinging pain at the beginning, but everything seemed to go fine. I finished. When I turned the lights on, we're both covered from like knees to nipples in blood. Which one of us is bleeding, and do I need to go to the hospital?
Was this your girlfriend's first time?
It was not.
Oh.
Were you making love on a bed of thumbtacks?
No, it was just a normal mattress. The mattress seems fine, if not a little dirty.
And you felt a stinging pain in your penis?
I did.
I thought you were doing a German accent.
You felt the stinging on your penis.
Excellent.
Well, I guess, did you cut yourself?
Possibly. It could be me. Let me look. And then there's a pause where I set the phone down and I go in the shower to get a look. And then I'm like, oh, yep, there is a little cut there.
Ah. Oh.
What did you cut yourself on?
I didn't. There was not enough lubrication and I just friction pulled some skin away from the shaft.
Oh, boy. Well, you guys are really...
Well, you know what? She was not excited enough.
No,
you
know, I mean... That, or I could also get, like, medical lube, if maybe she was excited, or that's also, like, not her fault, necessarily.
That's you guys had a lot of fire. That's good. That's
wow,
a positive.
Wow, this is great. This is great news. So, I'm glad you shared. It's terrifying.
Yeah, but, I think it's important to sexually educate people, so I hope some people, see this Hulu Dr. Ruth documentary
I hope the talent scouts are listening so that Jordan can get a
gig. Have you ever... there's the issue of anal penetration.
Where are we going here?
And
what are we doing?
Are we talking about with
this got yes ended into the wrong direction?
Have you ever been making love to someone
mm-hmm.
and going in through the outdoor, and then suddenly there's a little extra?
Extra what?
Oh, yeah. I think that there has to be some sort of understanding, especially if this is a spontaneous consensual event, that could happen because that stuff's in there. What I would say is I would share a story of a friend of mine I'm going to keep anonymous that would like to share that Adderall actually has the side effect of, occasionally making your stool slightly harder and more concentrated. Oh. And that's something that you don't want coming out in that situation because it could get caught in your pubic hair.
Oh.
That does sound bad. And oddly enough, none of these things that we're talking about here have come up in Sundance movies.
No, not yet.
I feel like they typically do.
There's a great movie. What was that movie called? Leave the Lights On. It was by the guy who
the Ira Sachs.
Ira Sachs. It was a great scene. It's a romance about two men, and they're making love, and during the act of lovemaking, one of them defecates, and it's like come on, and then they're getting in a fight, and then they have to like strip the bed and do the laundry while they're fighting.
Come on is them like yelling at each other?
Yeah, because they're yelling about they're angry in general. They're having a bad night.
Right.
It's about their breakup.
That film is pretty tragic all around.
That movie's a great movie, and it's the only movie I've seen where
that movie barely came out, and then Ira Sachs had a few hits that were actually like. They had the John Lithgow movie.
Yeah, the one with Lithgow and...
But nobody saw that movie.
Alfred Molina, the first one. Yeah, so Leave the Lights On is a very good movie. And it's really the only movie that I can think of that has a scene of anal penetration, which is a thing that happens. and the unexpected visitor of Talk Like Dr. Ruth, be very open about feces. You know, it's in the movie. It's amazing.
You don't see it very often.
You don't see it, but you do smell it. So, you know, this episode of Fighting the War Room, I think,
is brought to you by every colon medicine that they advertise on CBS All Access. Perfect segue.
Oh my God, we were watching Star Trek Discovery on CBS All Access, and all the commercials are for incontinence and adult diapers.
Look, they've measured the data from season one, and they know what their target audience is.
They're not even space diapers.
They're not
But Dave, before we started recording, I told you that we're all caught. Like, obviously, this trio of people are pretty big fans of Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah.
We should take the opportunity while no one else is here to talk about this new season, because it's totally different in my mind.
Yes.
But still totally successful and fun, and maybe I'm liking it even more than the really successful first season.
I think so.
Dave, what's your take on Star Trek Disco season 2, which Jordan and I somehow found time to catch up on completely during our time here at Sundance?
I think it seems weird, but I think a lot of the tumultuousness of the first season and trying to tell a serialized story and trying to keep, you know, some secrets that were maybe a little too obvious throughout the entire first season, like re-embracing sort of what I would call, I guess, the more social justice warrior aspects of the show. Wow. Really,
you don't have to call them that.
Well, I don't know what to call them necessarily, but the results of having a modern Trek show that's being written in this modern time is reflecting really well on the season two characters. Like, I don't know if I would, at the end of season one, believe necessarily that Burnham would say to Pike, like, everybody on this ship's gonna sacrifice themselves for any member of Starfleet, and believe it, because the whole season one was like a who can you trust sort of thing, and Lorca was crazy. But within that first premiere, I think pivoting to, like, we've got him, ladies, with the Pike shuttle escape and things like that, have really doubling down on what the CBS watching audience sort of wants from the show. I think they managed to pivot back to, like, a core of what Trek was. And, like, one of the only problems I think that I have with the original series is it was made in a particular time for women, and no matter how progressive it would be with that, there are certain aspects of that that shed over, because women had to be a certain thing on TV and Kirk had to have sex with a certain number of aliens. And so it's really interesting to see Trek still be Trek, but literally have to take the opposite position because that's where culture is now. I think it's bringing out really good things. I really like the Burnham Pike dynamic. I like how sparse the serialized thing is with Spock, where basically we're following these signals, but these signals are going to take us to single story episodes and, like, right, a planet to save.
This third episode was it felt like an original series or a Next Generation episode or something, where they're like, we have one mission to solve. We can't interfere with the culture. That stuff is, we didn't see any of that in the first season.
No, I'm much more bullish on season two than I was on season one.
Really?
Yeah. I feel like the bigger characters, I feel much more confident. Like Saru, like I kind of understand the character more. I think Tilly is a lot of fun. Stamets is sort of in transition right now, and I like getting to know the bridge crew more. Wokushun on the away mission was cool. You know, I like Detmer. Kayla Detmer. I like
her
a lot.
She's the pilot?
She's the pilot, yeah.
Yeah, in the third episode, I felt like she was full of personality. She got to do the donuts?
We didn't watch the donuts.
Isn't that, I thought it was a double premiere, no?
No.
Oh, so this is the second episode.
Yeah. We're still not to the showrunners fell out and everybody had to take over part of the season yet, which is the only hesitancy I have, is maybe there's a hard pivot coming in our future. But
it's going to only get better. It's going to only get better.
That's true. I mean, I have a lot of places that I want Discovery to go, so maybe I should ask you two fellow Star Trek fans, do you think with so much Pike bonding in the first episode, we're going to end up redoing Menagerie? Do you have to have the fall of Pike in this in Discovery since he's now such a key character?
He feels like someone who'd stick around. Do you think they'll get rid of the captain of the Discovery be the dark arts teacher, and every season it'll be someone new?
That might be the case. I'll tell you this. We're not going to see the Menagerie because that's later on in the timeline. But we are going to see, number one, the character Majel Barrett played in The Cage. That's Rebecca Romijn. She's coming.
Oh, right.
So hopefully we'll see Yeoman Colt. And I don't know. I really don't know. But
I want Pike to stay around. I want Pike to stay around.
And I wouldn't be surprised if Jason Isaacs' character comes back, but not the one... Not the bad Lorca. We might see good Lorca.
I thought good Lorca was dead.
Yeah.
Is good Lorca dead? Well, who knows,
Well, if you read the tie-in books, there's the implication that good Lorca
Jordan, please push up your glasses before.
if you read Desperate Measures...
No, do it as Dr. Ruth.
If you read the tie-in novel...
insert the tie-in novel to the vagina.
If you read the tie-in novel... And this is breaking news for those who don't read the tie-in novels, you know, which represents most normal people.
And they're canon.
The tie-in novels are canon, but I do have something to say about that in a minute. But the tie-in novel does have a – there's three – actually, there are four now. I haven't read the fourth one, but there are three tie-in novels, all prequels. One of them had a hidden page.
What? Where do you put a hidden page?
Okay. You read the book.
Okay.
The book's over. There's a page of acknowledgments, as in most books, an about the author page.
It has an after credit scene.
Then there is another page. It's an after credit scene.
That is cool.
That is cool. So there's a page in the second of the four Star Trek Discovery tie-in novels where, although they don't use his name, they strongly imply that good Lorca is alive and well in a mirror universe prison. So he's out there.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I would much rather have him back and sort of hand off Michelle Yeoh's character to her individual series if we're going to have a emissary to the mirror universe.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. You know, we're up to episode 2 of Disco season 2 now. We haven't seen Michelle Yeoh. We haven't seen Laurel. We haven't seen Ash Tyler /
Boak. They get teased in the...
They're teased in the coming up soon, but they talk about them. We haven't seen them yet, so it's exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Pike. I am glad that Michelle Yeoh was still on the show. I wish it wasn't evil.
She's going to be Giorgio. More crafty than evil. She's going to be like Garrick.
She's getting her own spinoff.
She's going to be Garrick.
She's doing like the Section 31 spinoff, which is like the spies of the Trek universe, which is...
Dark universe.
Yeah, it's the dark universe of Trek.
Okay, well, I guess she'll mellow out.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm intrigued by the mysteries of this season, too. Like, they're not so aggressive like the first season, where every episode had a new twist and a new... I mean, I couldn't believe where that first season of Disco ended up going, like, to the mirror universe. The fact that it got there, it was like the first season of the OC in terms of just how much plot it plowed through, and now we've kind of taken a step back, and it doesn't seem to be stumbling, but I am into this mystery about Spock, about the Red Angel. Dave, what do you think the Red Angel's going to be?
Jordan, what do I think the Red Angel's going to be?
Yeah, Jordan didn't even have a guess.
I mean, I hope it's not anything from canon. I hope it's something new. Like, I don't want the Red Angel to be, oh, it's a Tholian web. Like, no, bullshit. Just make it something new.
It's Wesley Crusher, who walks out of time, having become a traveler. I don't have a prediction. The one thing that I am looking forward to from the things they're laying down is fighting that space snake that young Spock's introduced as, because it's not until the next episode that he's described as drawing his fears, and I'm like, oh shit, we're gonna fight that space snake, whatever the fuck it is.
I like that idea.
So I'm looking forward to like the more action aspects of it, but I wouldn't be surprised if we end up in a much more Vulcan spiritual conclusion after we get through Space Snake as like the manifestation of Spock's fears or whatever. I really like this idea that we're using it as like the center spoke of the wheel is Spock, but each of the spokes extends to like our own little fun episode where, you know, what if all the religions smash together? You know, what if half the... But yeah, I definitely want more of that. And I don't think I'm expecting as much serialization as the first season, even though that was fun to suddenly like turn around and realize you were in the mirror universe and there is a hidden Klingon and whatnot.
Yeah, it was a little much. It was a little
so many mysteries, so many twists.
Yeah, so it's they were working too hard for the template of Star Trek, which doesn't need to be that complex. It can function as that, but I'm hoping that, you know, we get our Jonathan Frakes episodes in equal balance with our Kurtzman dictated episodes as we go forward.
Yes, this episode had the energy of Clock Stoppers.
Ooh.
I will say that like the pleasures of Star Trek Discovery for me are much more about, in the second episode, the carryover, the real serialization picks up because they grabbed this meteor out of space in the first episode.
Yeah, it feels like they're
and
doing,
now
it feels,
they can use that as a tool to solve another problem.
Yeah, it feels like they're doing the serialization right. Like, it's not entirely dependent on it, but, like, yeah, they get the meteor in episode one. It carries over to episode two. Episode two introduces this character, May whomever, the Caribbean woman, and then you find out she's dead, and then, you know, that's going to be in the next one then. So it's I feel like it's a good... It's a good blend.
Yeah. Hopefully we lose fewer Discovery crew members this season.
Yeah.
Last season was kind of brutal between tardigrade deaths and neck snappings.
You know, they got so hung up on Game of Thrones that they're you know, course correction.
I thought Samet's...
we're doing Ghost Season for sure, but that's not what I mean necessarily. I don't think we have to kill more people to have Ghost Season. As we learned from Elon Musk High School this episode.
What is that?
That's the high school Tilly went to that she's seeing her ghost friend from.
She went to Elon Musk High School? I missed that. Oh,
that,
no.
That must have been when Dan was talking.
Oh, God.
All right, I gotta get some work done.
All right, that sounds like the end of our check-in from Sundance. Guys,
George literally walked away.
Oh, well, I was gonna thank him, but...
I didn't think about canon books. The books.
You're ready.
All right.
We know which book the hidden page is in. People have all their consumer advocacy they need. Patches, thanks for making the time for me and having Jordan over.
What? Making the time? This is our podcast. I die for it.
Well, yeah,
David's not here, though. Let's be clear.
David's at Sundance. Why isn't he on the podcast?
That is a good question.
Why isn't fighting in the Roar Room? Why isn't fighting in the War Room issue demerits to David Ehrlich?
He's going to have to ask Jordan Hoffman Ruth a sex question next episode.
Yeah, that's good punishment. what's happening next week? We'll be back.
Next week, you guys will be back, and we are going to do a Sundance wrap-up. Here are the things that I've written down so far, having read Sundance coverage. Late Night, Honey Boy, Leaving Neverland, The Report. So at least those things will be covered, plus whatever favorites, like the souvenir, that pop up for David or for you between here and there.
Yeah, could be some last-minute surprises.
Late Night stays.
Okay. You're not allowed to scream from away from the microphone. All right, Dave. Well, then we'll talk then.
All right. Sounds good. You guys have a good night.
Bye.
Bye. It's the dream.